ladies and gentlemen of the jury, the prosecution is not going to get that man today. No, because I'm going to get him.
This is the Hagler Report for today. It is Friday. That's right. Friday, December 15th, 2017. I want to welcome everyone to this edition of the Hagler Report. Have a great show lined up for you. Hey, you can see us tonight. We're streaming live on video at YouTube Live, All Star Radio Network, as well as Blog Talk Radio, BTR, the fine folks there. Got a great show lined up for you today. Right out of the gate, Charles Ortel. He's such a great investigative researcher, intellectual author. He's a private investor and a writer. He's been exposing multinational nonprofit fraud since 2007. This guy has been, and he's really been making headlines of late, in particular, with respect to foundation fraud. And this is something that it's going to be really enlightening, the first hour, with respect to the Clinton Foundation and the offshoots of that. You know, the fake news, of course, that you're not hearing about, and you're not really here. We tuned to CBS, NBC, ABC. Are you hearing anything about the Clinton Foundation? No, of course not. And the fraud of that corporation? Of course not. So Charles Ortel's going to be coming on here momentarily. And then, of course, we've got Doug Papa, the third hour. In the second hour, we've got Lori Handrahan talking about an epidemic, America's trade in child rape. It's going to be a fascinating show tonight, so buckle up, buckle in. Portion of tonight's broadcast brought to you by Omaha Steaks, omahasteaks.com. If you want a great, and I mean a great gift for that special someone, or if you're having a hard time buying a Christmas gift for that person who's hard to buy for, or even better, buy this for yourself. Go to omahasteaks.com. In the search bar, enter HH. There, what'll come up is my family gift pack for under $50. You get just a whole lot of food. The food is delicious. I'll tell you something, it's fantastic. That's omahasteaks.com. HH in the search bar. More on that later. Now, again, Charles Ortel is coming forthwith, and, But a lot of other information as well. I committed my morning show to somewhat of a timeline of the surveillance apparatus, and I'm going to tell you right now, things are going to get ugly. In fact, that's how I titled my show. Things are going to get ugly. Look, I'm seeing a coup in progress, a coup d'état, the craven abdication of what it needs to be done by the Attorney General, by the Department of Justice, and a cold intent for a coup here in this country. So that's what I'm seeing. Joe, I'm going to toss it to you.
Oh, man, there's a whole bunch going on. Don't forget, go to HagmanReport.com. Check out all the interesting information that's posted up there, as well as Peter Chowka's latest article, which shows the Clinton, Comey, Mueller scandals explained in 323 words, which is a transcript from Greg Jarrett.
Yeah, he did a great job in doing that, by the way, Joe.
Yeah.
And in fact, I had played...
We probably played the same clip.
I played a portion of that. I had actually dug it a little bit differently today in my show. But anyway, I don't want to take a minute away from Charles Ortel. Charles Ortel, again, he's a private investor writer. He's been exposing multinational nonprofit fraud since 2007. He's been following a career in corporate finance, mergers, acquisitions, investment management. And since early 2015, Mr. Ortel has been investigating state, federal, and foreign filings of Bill Hillary and Chelsea Clinton Foundation, as well as those of the many affiliates of that entity. And that's a full-time job for a team of people, let alone one person. And I've been following Mr. Ortel's work, his incredible work, in my view anyway, his revelations, his investigative work, is for quite some time. Now he's appearing with Jason Goodman, Crowdsourcing the Truth on Sundays with Charles. But also, he's got his website, charlesortel.com, and of course on Twitter, you can reach him on Twitter at Charles Ortel. Mr. Ortel, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, please call me Charles, and thank you.
Well, I'll tell you what, it's great to have you. You're one of my favorite people to follow in terms of your investigative work product. It's second to none in my view. You've done so many things, so many revelations, educated so many. Anything I left out, anything that you want to tell the audience before we get started about yourself?
Well, not really, just that I was fortunate enough to retire in 2002 at the age of 46. And so I spend my time doing what I like to do. And one of the things I feel very, very strongly about is that good people across the political spectrum contribute of their time and of their purses and wallets to support the numerous charities, and that activity really separates this country from many others. So when I saw, by chance, somebody came to me, and when I saw that this Clinton Foundation was the largest unprosecuted fraud in history, and when I see now that even after all this work and all these appearances, state's attorneys general are not shutting this thing down, the Trump administration has not yet shut this thing down, and people haven't paid the price that need to be paid, I just have devoted myself to this. I hope, and thank you for giving me this exposure on your great show. I hope that the public pressure will now mount, and that with the passage of this tax bill, Donald Trump and others can turn their attention to doing right by the many donors and many people who play in charity land and do so much good work to expose the Clinton family for the fraud that it is, and to stop the Obama Foundation from following the same path.
Exactly. And you pointed that out, I think, on your appearance last Sunday, this past Sunday with, on Crowdsource the Truth. And of course, you also spoke about Corin Brown, who, suffered a fate, with a 50-page, sentencing memo, which was a clinical recitation of, charity law, essentially. So, this is a huge topic, and people hate this when I ask this, but where do you want to start? Because there are so many places we could go, and I don't want to ask a question that's going to just be off topic or, you know, so where do you, how can we start this? How can we best start this to serve your revelations, your findings, and to serve your purposes? Because you've done such great work. Where do we start?
Why don't we start, if we may, with the great people of the FBI. Donald Trump was over there, I think, today with the rank and file agents. And there's been this brewing debate as to how does Trump feel about the FBI? Is he supportive? Is he not supportive? And I'd like to profile some wonderful people at the FBI and give a resource to your viewership that should ignite a firestorm of new interest in doing what's right here. And that's to discuss the FBI, what that is.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Yes. So go ahead.
The FBI vault file so far has two separate releases that are relevant. One has to do with the William J. Clinton Foundation. That's two separate, they call them dumps, of documents. And these are original meeting notes and other memoranda and pieces of information still redacted, concerning the actual investigation that really did happen between February 2001 and early in 2005, when the FBI and the U.S. Attorney for the Southern District of New York, by September, it was Mueller as head of the FBI, and by December 2001, it was James Comey leading an investigation with all the might and resources while George W. Bush was president. This team could not discern the obvious fraud that did happen and escalate in that time frame, culminating 18 November 2004, when, believe it or not, this team defrauded all of us and defrauded the National Archives while they diverted $60 million from the Clinton Foundation. They also made dramatically false and materially misleading accounting pronouncements and filings right under the nose of the FBI and the Justice Department. And, you know, then in the latest dump, and this is, I just went through this actually in the last 24 hours. I haven't fully wrapped my mind around it yet. There's a second set of information relating to Hillary Rodham Clinton. That's 16 dumps. It totals 1,656 pages. I really encourage you and your staff and your viewers to go into this. It's all online. And boy, oh boy, does that explode the Clintons. How many times did you hear when this email investigation, the server investigation came to light? How many different times did you hear Hillary Clinton and her surrogates and Bill Clinton say, as part of a normal security review, this isn't an investigation, no grand jury's involved, it's a matter, it's just normal, it's policy wonk stuff. How many times did you hear that from March 10th, 2015 until the election?
It
was a constant refrain. You know what the truth is? The truth is that on July 6, 2015, and that's in these dumps, I would start with dump 16, and there you see clearly in that long list, it's over 100 pages of documents, there you will find out that on the 10th of July, 2015, so even before the primary started, 3 months before the first debate, by the 10th of July, 2015, the FBI had opened a criminal investigation into the mishandling of classified information, specifically targeting Hillary Clinton and Uma Abedin on March 10th, 2015. Thereafter, a grand jury was convened in the Eastern District of Virginia, and you will see 1,656 pages of documents and summaries of meetings, summaries of raids where they seized information, summary of what they found, summary of what I think are gross illegality. And you'll see that the brave men and women, the line agents of the FBI, they wanted to expose this. But it strikes me that what really happened here is that the Justice Department, people in the Justice Department, Loretta Lynch, probably, and maybe even higher than that, up into the White House, Valerie Jarrett, perhaps, made a decision that the FBI would go through the motions of investigating, but nothing would ever come to a head before the election because the DOJ wasn't going to prosecute. That's what I think you see in all this, and we don't have enough time to go through 1,656 pages of detail, but I will tell you, if you're familiar, and I'm sure you and your viewers are very familiar with the whole long chain of events here, you will see the Clinton rationale exploded, and you will see an obvious new set of questions, which is how could the top people in the FBI put up with this? How could they become part of this fraud? How could they do it? How could they think they were going to rig the primary? You know, maybe Bernie Sanders and his wife were willing participants in a charade to just go around the country and pretend that he was interested. Why would Bernie Sanders have said in the first debate, which I think was around October 13th or so, 2015, why would he have said that he didn't care about, quote, the damn emails? When at that point, the FBI, as is obvious from these notes, was rampaging, interviewing people right and left, pulling exhibits, flying around the country, combing through all kinds of stuff. They had concluded that, you know, the emails that supposedly were handed over, all of the work-related emails that, you know, after months of foot-dragging and months of intervention by Williams and Connolly and David Kendall and the various people who enable these Clinton frauds, maybe you could argue they're part of this vast criminal conspiracy. When they turned over 30,000 work-related emails, 30,000 pages, which were supposedly all the work-related emails, didn't take our team, our loyal team of field people, to figure out that that was a total lie. They found other examples of classified emails, and this was a full-fledged criminal investigation, which it would appear, under Comey's watch, was basically quashed. And, right when, just as Hillary had cemented her role as being the Democratic nominee, the people quashed, Comey and others quashed a full-scale prosecution. And, this to me, we have to study this. We have to get deeply into this. I am not a lawyer, but I consult with lawyers. And I can tell you, this has to be made a case study of what you do not do when you're in power the way the Clintons were. I mean, imagine if they would do this kind of stuff when she was just a candidate, what they might have done to us, what sort of a tyranny we would be living under right now. probably we and the viewership wouldn't have our freedom had Hillary been elected president and her team been allowed to do as president and as a cabinet what they attempted to do as a candidate. This is really something, I can tell you.
Well, this is like nothing we ever have ever seen. And just back to your point on Bernie Sanders, what is also curious to me is how he did not really raise a stink about the primaries being stolen from him. You did not see him on the news, urging an investigation into this. He kind of just rolled over and let it happen, which goes back to the point you made. Maybe he was, just there to go along for the show, and that's all. But we know that he also bought a vacation house, a summer home, as soon as the election was over, leading many people to ask the question, was he paid off for his silence? He did not raise a stink about those. So was he serious about running for president? Back to the emails, the DOJ, the FBI. Do you think that the credibility of the FBI has been tarnished to the point of no return with this Clinton matter?
No, I don't. I think what has happened is that, and I only know, racking my brains here, I only know one person who was in the FBI. So it's tough for me to make a characterization about the FBI. But what I do know from people who have interacted with the line people in the FBI, not the political hacks, but the line people, those are wonderful human beings. I mean, this investigative group that we have risks their lives for each and every one of us. They don't go and say, well, I better not check on this person over here. He might be a Democrat or a Republican or non-aligned. No, every day they walk out of their homes, their apartments, leaving behind people they love, whether they're married or single or whatever, and they go out and really for not very high compensation. I mean, they're not paid $225,000 or $500,000 for half an hour speech. The very few people in the FBI make $225,000 per year, and yet they go out every day, and they don't know whether in many cases they're going to come home. People die in the line of duty; they get harmed in the line of duty. They work under great tension often and, in harm's way all over the place, not simply in the United States, but around the world. These are fantastic people. I think what has happened is that the bureaucrats in Washington have gamed the system across the party lines, Republicans, Democrats, doesn't matter. The people who find their way to that, I guess you guys are not in Washington, D.C. I try to stay as far away from that tour as possible. But the people who go down there, they have lost sight of who works for whom, of what a reasonable compensation level is, about, how life really works. And I think the top people, certainly this Peter Stroke guy, McCabe, who's, I guess, the effective manager of all the FBI, these people, who rise into the level where, let's say, together with their partners, they're making $500,000 in government service or combined income. And then they're in a position maybe to leave the FBI and get lucrative work and maybe options or whatever as a director, as an investor in these security firms. Those sorts of people, we got to stop the argument that the American public is not allowed to know what is done on our behalf to protect our safety. I mean, I love these people at the FBI.
We might have temporarily lost
the connection with Charles Ortel. While we work to get him back, visit his website, charlesortel.com. That's charlesortel.com. And follow him on Twitter at Charles Ortel. And you can catch him Sundays with Charles on, Crowdsource the Truth, I believe, every Sunday. But, fascinating stuff. Do we have him back? All right, he's back.
Sorry about that.
Oh, no worries.
This is my phone, and somebody just called me. I apologize for that.
It happens.
So what I was saying is, we can admire these line people in the CIA, in the FBI, in the security services, but I think we have to admit, looking back to September 11th, 2001 forward, that what we may have done here is to give in a little bit too much to the impulse that says, we don't really want to know how we're protected. We'll just let the deep state protect us. And let's not put ourselves in a position where we can ask the tough questions as to what war should we be fighting and how should we be fighting and what constitutes success. We've allowed the deep state too much latitude, I think. And it's time for, you know, a serious discussion of what our national objectives are, what resources should be given to meet those objectives, and how well actually are we doing.
I totally agree. And by the way, all the FBI agents I know, and I've worked with a team of FBI agents back in the mid-90s as an operational asset, and I got to tell you, they were stand-up people, stand-up guys. So I echo your sentiments with respect to the FBI, and also even some members of the Department of Justice at the working attorney level are just fabulous. So now. But getting back to the Clinton Foundation, because this to me is just an incredible, it boggles my mind. Are we just looking very simply at the politics of personal or self-enrichment with respect to the Clinton Foundation, using government positions to garner, you know, whatever you'd call it, the garner favor among people? I mean, is it merely just the politics of self-enrichment, or is there something else going on here with respect to the Clinton Foundation?
Well, the Clinton Foundation is, I think one of the Sunday withdrawal shows that we did was Catch Me If You Can. The Clinton Foundation started as a small fraud while Bill was president on October 23rd, 1997. I think people realized it had some experience raising money for the First Legal Expense Trust, and they realize, I think, history will show if we are allowed to get into this in depth, that you could articulate the need for money. You could say that you were going to use that money for an intended purpose. But if the IRS was gamed, if the Department of Justice was gamed, nobody would really know how much money actually went towards the First Legal Defense Trust. And then when that was wound up, towards the Clinton Foundation. Nobody would really know. So initially, I say to people, you know, it's not what's in the books where you want to start with. That's not where you start with. You start with trying to figure out how much money did gullible people and did people who are willingly trying to trade their money for influence with the Clintons, either to get things or to not be prosecuted, how much money was sent towards the core Clinton Foundation and then towards all the satellite Clinton entities and affiliates around the world. And then when you guess that, then you look at the books and you say, well, how much did they declare they actually received? And I think the first theft, the first diversion is in that moment before you look at the books. Then people like me, you know, I'm not trained as a journalist or an investigator. I'm trained as being a financial deal doer. That's really what I did between 1980 and 2002. Now, to do that, you have to read and you have to understand math and you have to understand business and geopolitics. But, you know, I'm not somebody who, as I say, trained in the FBI or CIA or anything else like that. So I'm somebody who, after I retired, became very concerned about the direction of the global economy and the bubble that I saw exploding in 2007 and 8. Terribly complicated company, General Electric, that is in the news. And I called them out for bad practices beginning in August of 2007. And I think I was proven right. And even now, I continue to be proven right on that very, very complex fraud. This, to evaluate General Electric's books, you know, required a lot of time and effort and a lot of familiarity with accounting and inside and outside the U.S. Fortunately, I have that experience. I can tell you categorically that the Clinton Foundation, though it is required to have been audited by an independent auditor, has never validly been audited by anybody. Though they trot out these pieces of paper that have the word audit on them, they are not compliant. And nobody from the Clinton Foundation has ever dared challenge me on that. Nobody has successfully challenged that assertion. They just recently filed yet another false and materially misleading document, which they claim is an audit. It is not an audit. And even as we speak on this broadcast, Bill Clinton and others are raising money to get more money towards this fraud. You know, that in a nutshell, the simplest thing here, you contrast, or you look at that sentencing memo that you discussed for Corinne Brown, mm-hmm. who is almost the same age as Hillary Clinton, right? Almost the same age. She was running for office. She had been in Congress, I think, she was trying to go in for either her 25th and 26th years or her 23rd and 20th, I forget which. But she was running to be a member of Congress again. her district had changed, so she was, it was a special election. But same age, and around the same time that I'm now referring to him as Dopey James Comey, made the decision with the evidence that is in there on the FBI vault file for you to see. He made the false decision that Hillary shouldn't be prosecuted and that any investigation should be quashed, when at the same time the U.S. attorney in, I think, Jacksonville, Florida, decided to prosecute this Corinne Brown in the middle of her contest. Obviously, she lost. She didn't acquit herself in the way she challenged prosecution. She treated it as a joke. And she was convicted on 18 counts, including fraud and, I think, conspiracy and other matters. And she was just sentenced by a judge at age 71 to 5 years in federal prison over $800,000 charity fraud. This thing, the Clinton Foundation, just the core of it, not considering affiliates, is over $2 billion. You know, and Corinne Brown was just trying to be one of 435 representatives. Hillary Clinton was going to run the United States of America, possibly lead what's left of the free world, or what would have been left of the free world under her leadership. And you know, she would have had the ability to pack the Justice Department, to pack the IRS, to pack the FTC and the SEC, and then to try to pack the courts. How can you sentence Corinne Brown, an African-American woman, a Democrat, by the way, not a Republican, how do you sentence her to 5 years in a federal penitentiary at age 71 and not even investigate the Clintons? It's just not right.
I'd say, yeah, Corinne Brown, by the way, is 71, I believe, and gaming the regulations and controlling the regulators is where we would have been, I'm sure. Okay, wow. By the way, with respect to that, you had mentioned the different states, Florida. Can the state's attorney, state's attorneys general, can they launch any type of investigation? Do they have that authority as opposed to, we'll say, the Justice Department?
Well, it's the reverse. The way it works when you get a charity done, a federally tax-exempt charity, you start in a state. You guys are down in Florida, are you?
No, we're in Pennsylvania, so.
Pennsylvania, right. Oh, well, that's a good one to pick up then. So in Pennsylvania, this Clinton Foundation, the core ones, was formed in Arkansas. And when you file for your state exemption, you file your original paperwork in Arkansas, you then have to put together an application to the IRS, which is filed on Form 1023. That application, you're laying a marker down as the trustees of the foundation. You have to tell in that application, which is really detailed, you have to answer all the questions completely. You can't omit a material fact. It can't be misleading. Everything you say about your background, the qualifications of the directors, the executives, et cetera, must be true and complete. And you've got to articulate purposes that comply with the relevant statutes. You then, the IRS doesn't give you, it's not like a driver's license where they say, hey, you, with this driver's license, you can drive anywhere in the United States, and if you get an international version, anywhere else, and we won't ask you what type of passenger car you're going to drive, because it's a passenger license. Any kind of car, fine by us. No. With a charity, you have to only pursue your specific purposes. So if you get approved by the IRS as an Arkansas charity, all you can do is solicit for donations on a tax-exempt basis in Arkansas. You want to do it in Pennsylvania, above a certain small amount, you got to fill out Pennsylvania forms. You want to do it in New York, you've got to fill out New York forms in California and Illinois, etc. One of the things the Pennsylvania forms talked about is, have you ever had any experience using a fundraiser and gotten into trouble for doing that? Well, the answer is that almost immediately the Clinton Foundation got into trouble, first in Mississippi in 2001, but they were using a fundraiser that has gone by various names, and that fundraiser was disciplined in your state, in Pennsylvania, in 2002. And the Clinton Foundation continues to try to hide that fact across the country. The nice thing about the web of state laws is that they all refer to each other. So if you have a violation in one state, most other states say, you got to tell us about all your violations. Clinton said, refuse to do that. So every state in the union should shut the Clinton Foundation down for its ability to fundraise on a tax-exempt basis. and a conservator should be appointed. Now, meanwhile, the FBI and the IRS should be investigating this Clinton family. It is not that complicated. You know, it really isn't. The rules are very straightforward. I challenge any accountant listening to this to go out and tell me I'm wrong, that there hasn't been an audit, a legally compliant audit of the Clinton Foundation. For one thing, the audits that the Clinton Foundation did try, the audits in quotes that they tried to get for the period 2001 to 2004 are intentionally omitted from the Clinton Foundation website, but they're available in Massachusetts and California and other states. I have them. And every single one of those purported audits says, not in bold, but it says, these accounting statements are not compliant with the principles required inside the United States of America. Doesn't get any, you know, more open and shut than that. We're circulating during this important period where they were building the campus in Little Rock. The accounting statements do not comply with the United States accounting principles. And accounting statements are just like building a building. You know, if you start with a foundation in a place where you need a foundation, and you have a foundation that doesn't work, you can't put a first floor on top of that foundation. You can't put a second floor, a third floor, et cetera. So if your books and records are non-compliant from October 23rd, 1997 through December 31st, 2004, unless you can change them, which I submit the Clinton Foundation can't, unless you can change them, no subsequent set of records is true and correct and compliant. So this thing has never had a valid audit. They continue to raise money. They have never had truly independent trustees. And another chapter, which really gets my blood boiling, is that this is supposed to be an independent entity. It's not supposed to be, you know, a subsidiary of the Clinton family in Chappaqua and Washington, D.C. No, it's what's called a public charity. So it must have an independent board. That means it has to have, can't just all be Clinton loyalists, Terry McAuliffe and all of, you know, the people who've helped the Clintons over the years. No, you have to have truly independent trustees who understand their duties of loyalty, care, and obedience. You know, care meaning they take the requisite time to study. Obedience meaning they obey all laws, not just Arkansas law and Pennsylvania and New York, all law everywhere around the world. And finally, their duty of loyalty. That means in the event of a conflict between Bill Clinton making $17.6 million as the honorary chancellor of a supposed joint venture partner of the Clinton Foundation and not disclosing that still to this day, you know, you can't do that. And he's done it. They pocketed $17.6 million. They pocketed, all told, over $150 million in speaking fees, much of which has come from people tied to this charity one way or another. None of those connections have been adequately traced. You can't run a public charity for the benefit of private people, and you certainly can't do it for the people who, in the dead of night, adjust the bylaws of the foundation, which they did in November 2nd, 2013. They changed the bylaws to entrench the Clinton family, Bill, Hillary, and Chelsea, as being having total control over the Clinton Foundation, gutting its status as a public charity. And they kept that situation in place even as Hillary announced on April 13th, 2015 that she was going to seek the highest office of the land. Even then, Hillary Clinton remained illegally a Class A director of this Clinton Foundation without telling her donors, without telling the public, without telling the regulators, and stayed in that position until September 10th, 2015. Now, I bring all that up to say these are magic dates. When you look into this FBI vault file, you will see that, you know, they were trying to game the entire system. They were gaming the charity. They were gaming the charity's affiliates. They were jeopardizing and are jeopardizing all of the donors, the private foundation donors, the government donors to this thing. I think they all owe the American people a gigantic tax bill, and I'm going to work my hardest to make sure that we get this money back to reduce our debt. They were gaming that. They were gaming the Bernie Sanders wing of the Democratic Party and moderate Democrats. And they even tried to rig, I would argue, the general election as well, and to lead this crazy resist movement on the basis of a false narrative that I would argue is gaslighting, accusing the Trump people of colluding with the Russians, when in fact it's the Clintons who, going way back, in Bill's case, all the way back to even before he was president, and then while he was president, taking money from Mark Rich, of all people, who looted participated in looting the former Soviet Union.
You were the one that pointed that, if I remember correctly, I didn't know about the rich connection, and I think you were the one that educated me on that. And I think the American public, if I'm correct.
Yeah, I mean, the Clintons are, you know, certainly I'll give them one thing. They have no moral compass, but they're very clever. And I don't know how clever Hillary is. I think Bill is a twisted genius. And what they figured out is that if you're going to be the biggest economy in the world, really smart to set, and you can game your own country, why not create unregulated globalism, an unregulated global market where kingpin politicians from dynastic families can swan around the world, taking a cut of international deals that are funded by the UN, funded by the World Bank, funded by the IFC, funded by the American taxpayer, funded by taxpayers in big countries. And because these projects are so complicated, and because there's 193 countries that are 193 or 4 in the UN, there's always going to be a way to slide the structure, especially given now technology and the internet, away from the regulators who don't have the resources, may not have the inclination, and may even be corrupt themselves. They were smart enough to figure that out. And I think part of the Clintons, you know, look at this life perhaps as just one big game. You know, we're all going to be gone in the end. Who cares? You know, what matters? Who cares what actually happened? Because we're all going to leave the planet eventually. Let's just have some fun. Nobody will ever catch us. Catch me if you can. That's their mentality. Whereas the founders in the United States of America, and I think the great men chiefly who founded this country, but the women who worked with them to raise and make the country a great place, raise their children and make the country a great place, these people of very different faiths, across the Christian spectrum and Jews and some other religions, all of these people who came to our country in the very beginning understood that man needs to see life in perspective. We need to understand that we will be judged in time. And we cannot cede power to people who have no sense of right or wrong, which is what I think the Clintons manifestly have demonstrated. They don't care about right and wrong. I mean, who would stand between the desperately poor people in Haiti and say that we need to raise, as some estimate, as much as $13 billion, and then allow that money to be diverted? Who would do that? Who would then slap brochure after brochure, get these fancy pictures of this waif-like thin girls and boys with flies buzzing around their eyes and tears in their eyes, and you know, put these plaintive pictures out there, and then the grandmothers and grandfathers send whatever it is, $20 a month or more? Who would do that and not make sure that the money actually helped the people of Haiti? The answer? The Clintons.
Man, I'll tell you something. You just the outline was perfect. The foundation was the foundational material you just gave was perfect. Anyone, if you're hearing this for the first time, which I can't hardly believe, consider yourself enlightened. And if you're hearing this again, consider yourself more informed and you know, re-informed about this. Especially with what they did, with what they did in Haiti, and the information that Peter Schweitzer in his book Clinton Cash had documented, but of course you on your own merits and in your own investigation documenting the entirety of this fraud, it's amazing. But you're saying this is all hubris, this is all intentional, this is a big middle finger to everyone in America and everyone else. I mean, this is, none of this is incompetence. This is deliberate, planned, orchestrated in cold.
Well, yeah, I say I'm not involved in security because I'm not, but when I was involved in buying and selling companies as an advisor, we had a very strict rule at our firm that you couldn't, on all many travels that I went on, I couldn't ever read, business papers on a jet or, you know, whatever. I could only read whatever, fiction or something like that. So I developed an interest in spy novels, and I collect first edition spy novels, but, so I've read a lot of those, and you'll hear tales of, you know, the arsonist wants to go and watch the firemen try to put out the fire.
Yep.
And I think you see that behavior in these books that the Clintons have put out. One that really stands out to me is the book that was written published in 2007 called Giving, is a textbook admission of fraud when you look at it. And Bill starts the book, or whoever wrote it, starts the book recounting the tale, there's some dinner, and it's got a funny name. It's not meant to be the racial epithet. It's called the something, I think, raccoon or coon dinner in southeastern Arkansas to help raise money for this small poor town's football team. And Bill talks about this with joking about it in the book. And he explains that, you know, every year, if you want to be politically consequential in Arkansas, you got to go to this dinner, and a large number of people sign up to pay whatever you have to pay to eat this dinner. And what's it actually made out of? It's made out of roadkill. And what they do is they take roadkill and they put hot sauce on it, and Bill makes a joke about it. And nobody keeps track of the money. I think Bill saw that. He grew up, you know, not in Las Vegas, which is a big corrupt town, but in the equivalent of Arkansas's Las Vegas. You know, I forget the name of the town. Hot Springs, I think, was near there. And he grew up in this crazy environment with, you know, a difficult stepfather. He had to, you know, according to his book, which actually is his biography, My Life in Parts, is quite interesting. You know, he grew up in that environment, and his story could have been a great story. But he like it, you know, a Greek tragic figure. He has these fatal flaws. He can't get out of his own way. And I think nobody caught him. Nobody's ever taken Bill Clinton and walked into him with a big 2x4 or whatever you need to use and say, listen, Bill, you know, this ain't what you do, and you got to atone for your sins. He just gets away with, I don't care about money. Care. You know? and that's not true. I think, you know, Bill is very smart, I can tell. I mean, from what I read and when you hear him talk and react to, he's very, very smart. He has no moral compass. No.
Well, he's a hell of a lot smarter than I am. You know, obviously he's getting $500,000 a speech in Moscow. So he's got to have some smarts there. Or perhaps that's not, necessarily true. Mr. Ortel is our guest, Charles Ortel. I'm sure everyone knows Charles Ortel, our guest. Follow him on Twitter at Charles Ortel. Also his website, charlesortel.com. And catch him every Sunday. You're on every Sunday, right, with Crowdsource of the Truth?
Well, what we do is, just to mix it up a little, we call the show Sunday with Charles because I saw an opportunity. I don't want to do a daily show, but I think there's a market for a good Sunday show, yep, not a canned one, that's very, you know, fresh. And the major league talent on the big name Sunday shows, they don't really want to work at the last minute on Sunday. So a lot of what you see on those shows, in my opinion, is very stale. So we're going to do a regular Sunday show, but then travel intervenes and holidays intervenes. And so our forthcoming show actually will be on Monday at 3 p.m.
Okay.
But we're still going to call it Sunday with Charles, just to be eccentric.
Well, we're going to be tuned in. I love your presentation and your style, and that's not false flattery or blowing smoke up your butt. I'm just telling you, I think you've told me more, educated us here in the office, in the studio, more about these matters than anyone else that we've tuned into. I'm going to go back to something you said here because we only have you to the top of the hour. The FBI vault dumps, you mentioned something, and it kind of went over my head, I think. Are you telling me that the FBI had created a case against Huma Abedin and Hillary, and nothing was done?
That's exactly what I'm telling you. So this is a case. You see, I think the context that I see here, you know, is that I believe, knowing the Clintons just from the public record, these are the kings and queens of opposition research. Hillary Clinton did not expect to do the belly flop that she did in 2008, losing to upstart Barack Obama. You can be very, very sure they had a lot of opposition research on everybody, including Barack Obama. And she reluctantly, you know, I talked about it in the most recent show, but in June of 2008, there's a lot of reporting that shows there was a meeting at the House, Dianne Feinstein's house, between Barack Obama and Hillary Clinton, and I think some sort of dirty deal was cut then. You know, it was obvious that, you know, to me anyway, that, and I'm not a political expert, but it was obvious to me that a Democrat was going to win in 2008. That Democrat was going to be Barack Obama. And though it must have hurt like heck for Hillary to have to give in and disappoint her many donors who probably were out hundreds of millions of dollars, some sort of a deal was cut, I would argue, in June of 2008, not during that walk in the woods in November of 2008 and in the fable that has been told by many other people. And I think the deal was something like, look, you know, you're up against Republicans, you're going to need money. We have a way of getting a lot of money for the general election. Don't ask how we do it. It's going to be for your benefit. And our quid pro quo is Hillary's going to be Secretary of State. Bill's going to keep running the Clinton Foundation. You're not going to say boo about what we do. You're going to let us do it for 4 years. We'll help you get reelected. Then I'm going to ride off into the sunset, and you're going to let us do what we do with the Clinton Foundation. You're going to set up your own foundation, and then I'm going to be succeeding you in January 20, 2017. That's the deal. And if you don't play with us, it's not clear you're going to win. Now, something like that happened, is in my view. And that would explain, I mean, what I think about, for example, the New Yorker magazine cover that had Barack and Michelle. That was, I think, the handiwork of Sid Blumenthal, Sid Vicious Blumenthal. You know, if I'm Michelle Obama, if I'm supporters of Barack Obama, I see that New Yorker magazine cover with Michelle and Barack with, you know, machine guns in the White House and Arabic clothes, you know, Arab terrorist clothes, I'm most unhappy. That's the kind of thing, call me stupid, call me simple. You do that to me, and I can never, never smoke a peace pipe with you under no circumstance. That's outrageous. So it strikes me that the Clintons must have had something, must have been mutually assured destruction that led to this false memorandum of understanding. Lawyers in your audience will confirm what I'm telling you now, that it is not an enforceable document. Bill's name was not a party to it. He was not a trustee or named executive of the Clinton Foundation by December 12, 2008. So that document is Swiss cheese, unenforceable. They duped the Senate. They got Hillary across the line. And by Barack and whoever else participated in it, they then became part of the fraud, which explains why no one ever cared so very much about why 100% of Hillary's business was transacted on unsecured servers. I mean, I would have thought if I, God forbid, I ran to be president of the United States and somehow won, and somebody opposed me the way the Clintons opposed Barack Obama, you know, I would, the first thing I would do on January 20th, afternoon, I would have had my teams, standing by the IRS, standing by wherever else to find out what really was the case at the Clinton Foundation. I would have said, give me a report of what the heck's been going on here. And then, you know, 7 days later, while Hillary and Bill were sleeping, wherever they may have been sleeping, at 4 o'clock in the morning, I'd bust down the door of their houses. If I, you know, knew then what I know now, that foundation was basically bankrupt, non-existent, was legally, you know, defunct. And somehow Barack and his team put up with all this. And so the only way I can understand that happening is if the Clintons had something on the Obamas that terrified them. And I don't know what that might have been.
Good points. One last question before I kick you to Joe, because he's got a couple of questions. One last question about the relationship between Obama and Hillary as you understand it today. I've been hearing through my contacts that, you know, there ain't no love lost between those two, the Clintons and the Obamas. Is that what you're understanding, or do you have something different?
No, I think that's absolutely the case. I mean, I don't know. I think, you know, giving some free advice to the Democratic Party, which is worth about as much as they will pay for it, is that I think you look at this Democratic brand, and I'm not interested in politics. I'm not being coy, but my family has been involved in politics early on. I have an ancestor who was the mayor of Springfield, Illinois, when next door, across the street, neighbor of Abraham Lincoln from 1846 to 1849. And another ancestor who ran and lost to be a congressperson in Montana, all as Democrats. You look at the Democratic Party, and it is the party of extinction. It's going down a direction that didn't work, hasn't worked under Obama, didn't work in 2016. And on the other hand, if you take the Clintons out of the equation, the strongest potential candidate for the Democrats, and I'm not advocating this person, might be Michelle. And I could imagine that the people around the Democratic brand who, you know, contribute and then receive returns perhaps from government contracts, wait, look at this and say, you know, there is going to be an argument by 2020, perhaps, that, you know, let's go back to the good old days of Barack Obama, two for the price of one, et cetera. So I bring all that up to say it would be in the interest, I think, of the Obamas, particularly now as we see this FBI vault file. When you get a chance to go through it, you'll see what I'm talking about. It. When the team Obama looks at that, you know, they might well have decided, you know, figuratively, we got to put a knife in the Clintons. And I would mention that, you know, actually during 2016, what was really gratifying and interesting to me, not just to come on shows like yours, is that I had more airtime, and I get more airtime actually on progressive stations and progressive podcasts, because people across this spectrum are outraged how far, how low the Clintons have gone, abusing charity land, abusing a charity named after themselves, you know, that has to file public records in states and at the IRS around the world, all of which are wrong. It's not like, you know, it's not like they're going to be able to walk all this stuff back and say, we didn't know. I mean, we are not lawyers. Oh, yeah, we are lawyers. I mean, we're not educated. Oh, my daughter has a PhD. I mean, we don't have any experience with, oh, I was a governor. I was a senator. I was a president. I mean, they can't say any of that. You know, and when people finally go into these details, they have to come away being as shocked and horrified as I am. And I think what will happen here is there actually may be bipartisan agreement that it makes a lot of sense to use the Clinton Foundation as an example about not to run a charity. And then, now that we have a close on tax reform, some good news, we can use this fraud and the exposure of this fraud as a means under existing laws to go after the big donors, Gates Foundation, for example. I mean, Donald Trump, if he wanted to close the budget deficit quick-like in 2018, pay a visit to Bill Gates and say, listen, Bill, you know, you can't say you did this by accident. You made over, your charity gave over 100 different donations, over $150 million to the Clinton Foundation, various guises, over time. And the penalty for repeatedly falsely characterizing your donation as being to a public charity when it was to a fraud is I can say, all right, Bill, thank you for this pile of money in your foundation. Please stand by as the FBI liquidates your portfolios, pays off your bills, and sends all of that money into the Treasury as penalty, taxes, et cetera, on the entire kit and caboodle of the Gates Foundation, which I think is more than four, it's around $40 or $50 billion. Send that in to pay down the debt. Move on to the Rockefeller Foundation. Move on to the other big foundations, and then go to these governments around the world, Australia, France, the UK, Sweden, you name it, Netherlands, and say, guys, what were you thinking? You know, how could you send all this money towards the Clinton Foundation and not care that it didn't end up there? You know, what were you doing?
Let's see. Let's see how many friends Bill and Hillary have after that happens. But what a remedy. What a remedy in a number of different ways. We only have a couple of minutes left with you. I can't believe how fast this hour has gone. Joe, you were talking.
Yeah, Charles.
Go ahead.
Just a couple of things, real quick. One, do you think that we will see any type of justice brought to Hillary Clinton, to any of the people involved in the FBI, the DOJ, all the way stemming back to the Clinton emails, her lawyers? Do you think we'll see anybody held accountable for the crimes and scandals that we've seen in the last 3 years?
I did say I'm not involved in politics, so maybe I'm naive, but I think actually that this is so big, the largest unprosecuted criminal conspiracy in history, far bigger than Madoff, for example, forgetting Corinne Brown. It's gigantic, you know. And you have a president who's a disruptor. Excuse me. You have midterm elections coming up. You have people who are hurting. We're looking as Americans for an issue where people on the right and the left can agree. This is a hopeful issue. I mean, you could make the case. I'm not saying I'm going to make this case yet, that some of the people who built up these foundations are monopolists. You know, Bill Gates, is he a monopolist? Mike Bloomberg, is he a monopolist? Should they have been able to get these gigantic things built in such a short period of time? You know, is it possible that there should be some retribution here going after not the 1%, but you're talking here about the 0.00001% who have, you know, sat over top these charities that made themselves look better? Mike Bloomberg has done some very good things. I'm not attacking him now, but administering his own charity, working with the Clinton Climate Initiative, which is a complete fraud, making a big deal of that with the C40 Large Cities Initiative, another fraud, that's a big mistake. And, you know, we could all work together now and say, you know what, let's make sure the money that's raised for charity goes to charity. And while we're at it, you know, I went to some Ivy League schools. Let's go after them. You know, the Harvards, the Yales, the Columbias that have allowed their, and the Cornells that have allowed their names to be used as cover for these fraudsters. Well, they have exposure too, technically. You know, Donald Trump and the IRS could go to Yale and Harvard and Columbia and say, listen, you know, you weren't operating your universities to shed light on and solve real problems. You were operating the universities, it seems, to create hedge funds and private equity funds and enrich your professors and enrich the Clintons and curry favor with these politicians. That's not what charity's all about. And you're the great moralists on these Ivy League campuses, telling, lecturing the rest of us about what's right and what's wrong. Why is it right for you overpaid people to send money to enable this gigantic international criminal conspiracy that really does reflect badly on a great country?
Man, I'll tell you something. This is exactly what we needed to hear. So essentially, there is hope. There's hope for justice, however it might appear at the end of the day. We've in the closing seconds, I just want to say thank you so much. Charles, would you agree to come back with us in the future and just give us update? Oh, all right. You've been so gracious with your time. We really want to thank you for your appearance tonight, taking away from your family time on a Friday night. Thank you. And you're welcome back, and we'll have you back, and we'll be following your work. We'll be promoting everything that you find. God bless you. Stay safe too. This is some stuff. All right. Charles, thank you so very much.
Awesome interview.
Yeah, indeed. Folks, that was Charles Ortel, charlesortel.com, and he is one of the premier researchers, investigators, especially about the charity fraud and the Clinton Foundation. Maybe right back. Stay right where we're at.